Welcome, crooks and liars, listeners and readers. I'm joined again by a very special guest, one of my favorites, from Air America every day, from Tucker Carlson almost every night, is Rachel Maddow. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me.
John, I'm so happy to do it. I love Crooks and Liars, and you've been such a help to me in terms of getting my show prepped and getting the word out. I'm delighted to talk to you.
Believe me, it's my pleasure. You don't know how much you're helping me, and it's been a busy day today, and I know it's late where you are, and starting the day seeing Tom DeLay's face, you know, it wasn't really a mug shot, but still seeing him on the smoking gun was very rewarding.
You know, it was funny though. It almost looked like a campaign picture. I mean, he's got that pin, and he's got his tie perfectly tied, and his collar straight, and he's got that big grin, and you know, he has orchestrated this thing for such a crook, for being a guy who's got three charges against him, felony charges, looking at life in prison, and you know, he's already been admonished by the ethics committee three times. They're not even starting ethics investigations into the stuff he's getting indicted for now. I mean, with all of this stuff, he is playing this thing as best as you could possibly play it.
He is, but you know what he reminds me of perfectly? You know, when you go to the Godfather movies, because they laughed when they would get arrested because they knew that it wasn't going to stick, so he's kind of like, you know, Fredo over there with his tie, and you know, here's the prosecutor, take my mugshot, you know, and laughing.
I know, but you know, but that's all, it's all a game, you know, that this is all trying to make us think that he's totally confident because he knows he's done nothing wrong, and this is all politics, and Ronnie Earl is the real criminal. I mean, this is classic Roe Bush Republican strategy, right? Like, you get accused of something and then make the people accusing you the villains. That's the way they've always done it. I mean, it's as old as dirt. That's the way you do it.
You know, it's the technique, and Craig Crawford has a book called Attack the Messenger, and they do it better than anybody, and I'm sure you've seen the ads now. They got ones with the pit bulls. They got another one. It's all, you know, instead of activist judges now, it's activist prosecutors.
Right. Well, and, you know, and it doesn't matter if we're going to see it happen to Patrick Fitzgerald, too. It doesn't matter if the prosecutor is a Republican, if the prosecutor has any sort of evidence in their past of having any partisan interest whatsoever. Now, in the DeLay case, they're going after the judge, because the judge, heaven forbid, made a campaign donation to John Kerry, because only Republican judges can judge Republican criminals? What is this? You know? And if it was a Republican judge, they would find some way to go after the judge in the case. It's just this attacking the messenger thing. They're very good at it, and the reason they're good at it and they're sticking to it is because it works. And so we got to, you know, there has to be a kind of a counterattack on that to at least point out what they're doing, at least mock them for it, so maybe they'll at least feel embarrassed while they do it.
Right. Well, you know, they won't feel embarrassed, but we are mocking them. But, you know, President Bush did something interesting where he said that Fitzgerald was actually handling this investigation, you know, nicely. Yeah. So he kind of threw it out there. Like, in other words, if anyone tries to attack him, you just say, well, the president doesn't think so. I found that really interesting. He said that on a Today Show with his, you know, one of his photo ops where he's making believe he was hammering nails. But, you know, what do you get from that?
Well, it's, again, he'll say that the prosecutor he thought was doing a good job, and then the prosecutor went off the rails. I mean, you heard last night on Tucker Carlson, on Wednesday night when I was on with Tucker on MSNBC, he was basically telegraphing that whole idea. He was saying they ought to be accusing the prosecutor of being out of control. They ought to be accusing the prosecutor of being partisan. They ought to be. And he's not idly speculating that they ought to be doing that. He's telegraphing to the Republicans, this is what you got to do.
Right.
And they will go after Fitzgerald. And the Republican line that they wanted to see the prosecution through, and they wanted to have the investigation come to fruition, and Bush's nice words about Fitzgerald, those will all be, well, that's before we realized he was going to be doing something crazy, like actually prosecuting.
He was actually doing his job. You know, what's the term now Fox News is using? The criminalization of politics.
Oh,
you know, before it was okay to just throw your opponent under the bus and, you know, spread rumors that they have illegitimate children. You know, I mean, that's okay. That's supposed to be fine. This is the kind of political system that we're going to teach the people in Iraq.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's funny, and he's obviously Tucker. We can tell Tucker that, believe me, Karl Rove already knows that. They already have it planned. They're just waiting for the indictments to come down. And what's your feeling with sort of, you know, with the news stories coming out where there's whistleblowers? And do you think Because I really have a feeling that it is going to reach up to the vice president, and it's just not wishful thinking.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've been a real... I've actually been stylistically a little bit conservative about interpreting what's going on with Fitzgerald, and I've been taking some heat from it on my show for not having kind of chased down every rumor and followed down every anonymous source and been interested in everything that every source close to the investigation has to say, because what I feel like is, you know what, it's a little bit like the intelligence reform debate. Me, as a mere mortal out here in the media, out here as a citizen, I actually have no idea where that stuff is coming from. And if the media can't name its sources, and if they can put stuff on the front page every single day that never has a corroborating source, never has a secondary source, and damn sure never has a name on any of the sources that we're getting, then we have no idea if what those sources are doing are leaks for the public interest, are leaks for people to be saving their own skin, or are leaks for disinformation to make us think some certain thing about somebody in the administration to put us off the case. We have no way of assessing the veracity and the credibility of all of these leaks. And until we get some information that actually has a named person behind them, I kind of don't believe any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well,
you know, John, one of the things I think is interesting about this case, and I think that you and other people online have done a good job with this, is making it a little seem less complicated than it is. I think the man on the street thinks, I have no freaking idea what this investigation is about. If there's indictments, I don't even know what they'll be for. Something having to do with the CIA and Niger, I don't know. And they made it seem really complicated. And I think that, you know, that's part of the reason it seems complicated is because nobody's been able to come up with a simple narrative to explain what's going on in Fitzgerald's office. And that makes me think that when we finally do hear from Fitzgerald, he might surprise all of us. He might indict somebody that we have not even got on the radar screen. He may indict Bob Novak. We don't know. Or he may not indict anybody. He may get an extension to the grand jury. We have so little, like, raw information.
I know he has really kept, you know, a closed lip on the whole subject. And, you know, I tend to discount, you know, when the leaks are coming from the lawyers, because they're usually trying to, you know, get stuff in the papers.
Yeah.
As opposed to, Mike, you know, with the two sources possibly being whistleblowers, John Hanna and Wormser. Right, and those are coming from real reporters that are getting that have sourced and close, you know, aides tied to them. So I tend to believe that
what's the justification of people talking to those reporters, you know? If they know that their name's never going to be in the story, they're never going to be held accountable for what they say if it turns out to be true. Maybe they're feeding that stuff to reporters as a specific disinformation campaign. I mean, we know they're not above lying when they got their name on it, when they're sitting there in front of the UN with everybody to see who they are.
Right.
Why would they not be lying when their identity is held in secret? I just don't believe any of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there is a lot of, you know, we're all just speculating.
Yeah.
But, you know, just for me and my own take is that I just don't believe he's taken this much time for him to say, you know what, I've done a thorough investigation and I don't find anything wrong with anybody and you know, we're going to move on. He could have did that. And I think that was a problem with the administration, and they never expected him to do this, and it's caused so many problems, and I believe that's why Rove has been back to the grand jury so many times, because, you know, changing his story. I mean, how can he remember who he talked to, what reporter, when? I mean, this guy knows, you know, 1862, you know, 1800, you know, poll results.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know, but he can't remember who he talked to, and I think that they've just been tripping each other up. I guess probably, I don't think he's going to ask for an extension, and I think he will, you know, get down to it next week, but we will see.
We will see. And I, you know, I hope that I'm wrong, but I tend to be a little bit of a cynic about these things. I was a cynic about the election. I tend to be a cynic about these sort of things. And, you know, Fitzgerald could say anything. I mean, the Cisneros probe is still going on. There's nothing going to come out of that. That's been 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Whitewater probe went on for how long with how many millions of dollars, and nothing came out of that. He spent a lot of time and a lot of money, but to me, that doesn't... I'm trying not to get my hopes up, is basically what it comes down to. I hope that I am pleasantly surprised and somebody gets nailed to the wall who's a four-letter name that starts with B. But, but I don't know. I'm reserving judgment. I'm not optimistic.
No, I hear you. It's just, you know, we'll close with... Yeah, it's it's like, you know, politics as usual to leak the name of a CIA operative. That's just, you know, that's all it is. It's just a little hardball politics.
You know, it's amazing to me, though, that the analogy is so clear to me on this, because politics as usual is smearing the messenger. Politics as usual is Joe Wilson said something that turned out to be true that was really inconvenient for us, so let's go after Joe Wilson. That is politics as usual, and you see that with them going after Fitzgerald, going after Ronnie Earle. That is politics as usual. But you know what's not politics as usual? As you say, outing a CIA agent to do it. It's like, I was going to run a red light, but in the meantime, I ran over an 8-year-old in the crosswalk to get there. Well, you know what? You're not going to get busted for running the red light. That was politics as usual. But the 8-year-old that you ran over in the crosswalk, the throwing the national security of this country under the bus for your own political aims, you do go to jail for that. And even if that was just something you did on the way to your politics as usual thing, you're still going to get slammed for having done something really wrong and really, really against the interests of your country.
No, I agree. And also the fact is, you know, it's not that, you know, she wore cases for years and years. And so now people can go back and track her cases for the last 10 or 15 years. And it's all those people that have been put at risk. So, you know, and the fact is, and they never let us forget 9/11, and we are at war, and for them to do that for petty grievances is just even, you know, ups the ante of despicable, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the despicable is worse, and that's why I just feel that Fitzgerald is serious, but we shall see, and hopefully you will be surprised.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised. I'm always hoping to be wrong in situations like this, which is never, it's probably a source of my existential angst in the world.
All right, and I was telling you before, there's a funny story where President Bush is coming out to California in Beverly Hills, and, you know, he ran his campaign, and so did the, you know, many Republicans, which is that, you know, Hollywood is evil, the elite, the evil liberals, they're corrupting our children, and yet he's coming out here and doing $1 million fundraiser.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, everything's evil except for if I'm getting $1 million.
Right, well, everything's evil, and I hope nobody reports I'm going to Hollywood. And, oh, boy, I hope nobody remembers what I used to say about Hollywood. You know, like, they'll probably even try to cash in on some, like, some Bush cachet that he's in Hollywood and he's a golden boy in some way. They'll try to cash in on it and have it both ways. But as long as there's money behind it, all the principles just go out the window.
They'll probably have those guys that sell those Hollywood maps, you know, to the hotel, you know, Bush's, you know, you know, Tech Crawford map or something, you know.
Bush slept here. You know, John, I mean, you're out in California. My feeling is, and I'm from Northern California, I live in New York right now, I feel like when the Republicans do this this railing against Hollywood, the saying, oh, Hollywood values aren't American values, I am not a person who sees anti-Semitism everywhere. I'm not a person who thinks that, like, the Jews are being witch hunted all over the world. But when I hear them say, like, Hollywood values aren't American values, that just sounds like crazy anti-Jew ranting to me. Do you hear it that way, or do you think it's just me?
You know, I do, and especially when you get, you know, and I grew up a Catholic, and when you hear crazy William Donahue say the most outrageous, he's the biggest embarrassment that I've ever heard speak on TV.
Yeah.
And to you know, you've heard his rants, and you know, the secular this, and, you know, this. I mean, it's amazing what they do. But again, see, it's all about fundraising. It's all about money. And I go after the extreme, and I'm very clear. I don't go after Christians, evangelicals, the extreme.
Sure.
And I read a quote in the LA Times, and a pastor said, you know, a church under siege is a strong church. And they need these symbols so that they can fundraise.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see what James Dobson drives. I'd like to see where he lives. I'd like to see where Tony Perkins lives. I'd like to see that. But, you know, but they always have to have the Just Us Sundays. They always have to have this to fundraise, to make money. And I always, these are the people that Jesus would kick out of the temple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when it becomes all about money and you use religious intolerance to try to spike your fundraising and all of those things. I mean, for me, I have the same orientation that you do on Crooks and Liars. Here on my show at Air America, I'm never going to take on people for simply having a religious motivation to what they do, because faith drives people in different ways, and I don't think faith is a bad thing in the world. But religious intolerance really is a bad thing in the world, and when in the name of faith or in the name of politics or in the name of Mickey Mouse, I don't care, you tell me that we're going to make it legal in this country for a Head Start program to put up a sign in their window that says we're hiring, Catholics need not apply, or we're hiring, Jews need not apply. Like, I don't care if you're going to define that as something that you can call that religious freedom, but that's religious intolerance. You can't have religious supremacy in a country where religion and state are separate, and you end up with this real, you know, with Bush saying that one of Harriet Meyer's qualifications is her faith. Bullshit. I mean, your faith can keep you, your faith can't keep you from being qualified, but your faith also can't qualify you for the job. We're a society where your faith isn't part of your merit, and they just don't buy that. They're actually after religious supremacy as a way of trying to bolster this evangelical vote and their evangelical fundraising, and I find it an insult.
You know, I do too. I mean, this country, the separation of church and state is what's made it, you know, made us great, and if I was, you know, a member of some other evangelicals, you know, churches, I would be outraged, because see, what happens is when Pat Robertson talks about taking out, you know, Google, and when he prays for people to, you know, to get off the Supreme Court, I mean, he's an embarrassment, and what he does is I think he cheapens the rest of the whole Christian, you know, lifestyle and the religious people, because let's face it, you know, when there's hunger, when there's poor people, you know, when there's poverty around the world, it's, you know, a lot of evangelicals, a lot of Christians go out and do such good things, yet because the media especially is always has Jerry Falwell on or always has Pat Robertson, they get painted with this brush of these are what real Christian values are, and when have you ever heard anything outside of, you know, the Supreme Court or gay rights out of their mouths? You never hear anything about helping the poor. You never hear anything about getting, you know, health care to people.
Right, exactly. And you have, you know, the Rick Santorum is trying to bridge that now. Rick Santorum is trying to make him seem like he's a religious extremist who also has the interests of the poor in mind. But, you know, Rick Santorum, that would make sense if he were a Democrat, if he were a faith-motivated Democrat. But he's a faith-motivated Republican, and that means that he lives, eats, and breathes corporate money. And so he comes up with a, you know, he comes up with a minimum wage proposal that's great for big business. But it technically has something to do with the minimum wage, and so he tries to take on this Democratic mantle of being interested in the poor. I mean, it all comes back to money, and so Bush gets to cast aside his anti-Hollywood stuff in order to have this fundraiser, and Santorum gets to put forward his minimum wage proposal that's all about big business. And the Republicans, at core, no matter what they're talking about, no matter who they're trying to court from the religious right, no matter who they're trying to get out in terms of voters and fundraisers and all of those things, the Republican Party only exists because of corporate interests. And that's what it always comes back to. And that's why it's crooks and liars, right?
That's right. I mean...
It's always corporate money. And without corporate interest, there is no Republican Party, no matter what spin they're talking about religion. And that's the thing that we can never let go of, I think.
No, you know, and I always love when they say about the special interest groups. Well, the special interest groups finance them. And talk about Santorum, what I had to really laugh during the Terry Schiavo case. You know, he ran down on Hannity and comes and made an appearance like as if he was supporting it, but he was really at a fundraiser.
These guys cannot get away from who they really are. They can't get away from that. And that's why, I mean, that's why I think Air America is important in the sense that, you know, it's not just having a mainstream voice to counterbalance the right-wing voice. It's actually having a lefty voice, because you have to be able to talk about corporations. You have to be able to talk about money. You have to be able to talk about capitalism and all this stuff that sounds like I'm some movie from the 60s going into some Marxist textbook. But you actually have to keep coming back to the fact that they are serving their corporate masters above everything. Because otherwise you can't even explain what they're doing.
No, you know, that is it, in you know, hitting it right on the head. And going through money, that's just because I know you have to wrap up soon. Yeah. Whatever happened to Social Security is doomed. It's doomed. We have to change it now.
Well, you know, Social Security will be doomed again when it's convenient for Social Security to be doomed again. They're just keeping the old people on hold for now, on the way to their doom. All this scare stuff about Social Security has to be what motivates everything that we do now, because it's crashing and burning as we absolutely speak right now. Yeah, apparently not so much. Who knew?
Well, you know, they have other things on their mind now. At the time, you know, he was fresh off the victory. Let's just destroy Social Security.
Here's another program that works. Let's kill the National Weather Service.
Hey!
Kill the Postal Service. Let's kill Social Security. Anything that works, that's government, has to have a bullseye on it.
Oh, my God. It's you know, it's just terrible. But that's what Crooks and Liars is about, making sure that that doesn't happen. And, you know, it's funny. I wrote the other day that, you know, if Rove gets indicted, that if Bush were to do, like, a Rove tour, he'd definitely go down a lot faster, because when he did his Social Security tour, his numbers kept going down and on his Social Security tour.
Well, think about what Rove has orchestrated in the past year. Like, Rove really, I mean, this whole boy genius idea is a little bit on the ropes. Like, he orchestrated the Social Security thing, not so great. Orchestrated the Terri Schiavo thing, not so great. And apparently also orchestrated the Harriet Myers nomination. So, you know, I'm not sure that we should be still thinking of him as a boy genius.
He has, you know, and they're trying to say, well, he's a little preoccupied now. Sure. Yeah, it has not, you know, when you talk about the second term blues, I mean, President Bush's ratings are as low as I've ever seen. And, you know, Mr. Rove is not doing his job for Mr. Bush. And, I mean, they are just falling apart. And, you know, what's been interesting about the Harriet Myers case is just watching conservative attack conservative when you have a panel of Brit Hume, you know, and yeah. Fred Barnes, and they're like arguing over, you know, Bork said that Bush wasn't a conservative, and you just got to watch that and laugh.
When they get one more concrete assurance that Harriet Myers is going to overturn Roe v. Wade, I think they just need one more strike in that category. They need to know one more thing about her being assured to overturn Roe, and then all of that conservative, criticism of Myers is going to fall away, I think.
Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's interesting to watch, but I am waiting, and I'm telling you this. Arlen Specter is just waiting for James Dobson, because if you remember, you know, right after the campaign, you know, Arlen Specter came out and said, hey, you know, it might be hard to get, you know, someone on the bench that's going to try to overturn Roe v. Wade, and James Dobson was on all the shows saying that he had to derail, you know, Arlen Specter's nomination.
Yeah. And Specter made a deal of some sort in order to be able to hold on to that chairmanship.
He did, but now, when it got leaked that, you know, that Dobson had talked to Rove, Specter was on the shows the other week saying, you know, we just might call him as a witness.
That was excellent.
I could see the glee in his eye. I was laughing about it. Well, listen, I know, you know, you got to get ready for your show.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you so much. This has been really fun, and, you know, keep rocking, and I love you, and so do all the Crooks and Liars.
John, you do a great job at Crooks and Liars. I hope someday you become a zillionaire because of it, and thanks for interviewing me. I really appreciate it. You do great work.